From the heart of Europe to the world, this is RTI.
Well, hello, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, dammy a panny, it's Postcard from Popnet, your weekly sideways and, I quote, hilarious look at the news. Some people just have no taste whatsoever, do they? This is Eric Wiltshire, located and perched in the beautiful town of Popnet at the base of the Tatry Mountains, where there's still snow on the top. And I have to say that I did go for a walk last week over the Easter weekend, and my legs have been giving me jip. My girlfriend said, "How's your breathing, Eric?" I said, "My breathing's all right. It's just my body saying, 'What the hell are you doing with your legs, boy?'" It did hurt. It did hurt. Anyway, that's me on the other side of the festering ponds, which this week is definitely festering, aka the North Sea. It's none other than the young Mr. Lee Banks.
How do you do?
I do very well. How do you do?
I'm not doing very well at all.
Why?
No, honestly, I nearly died last night. I am surprised that I actually made it through the night.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Did they not put you back in your coffin? Oh, I see.
That was a silence to register my disgust at that remark. No, I've got a loose tooth, and it's a wisdom tooth, and it's coming out by itself.
No, it can't.
What can't?
If your wisdom tooth comes out, that's it.
What?
You'll be sitting there next week going... And that'll be it.
You see? Does that make any difference?
Hi to the guys at Talk Radio X, Replay, and, of course, 1FM this week, a new service. Replay, yeah. Over in Luxembourg, and you nice folks listening on your iPhone via Audio Boo, and RTI, which brings me to a significant point, a juncture in the programme. Please.
We've only just started.
Well, I know, but pretty please, when you're writing to the show, let us know where you're listening, because it would help us, because we get ever so confused.
We do, because we have listeners all over the...
Globe. All over the place. Which, and if we don't know how you're listening, it kind of like, you think, I wonder where that person's from. It's just, we just like to know. Because we're like that. Which reminds me, got to say hi to Henry O'Donovan, who says, "Just listening to you, Eric, and the other guy."
Oh, no, I'm taking offence at that. Well, at least he called me a guy. He didn't call me a girl.
Lee, don't take offence. It's always bigger to take a brick wall. Listen to you, Eric, and the other guy having a chat.
And also, he's laughing at me.
Well, that's true. Hilarious, he says. Love it. Henry's from, I've got to get this right. Because I did it wrong once. Sorry, Henry. Bondi Beach is where Henry lives, down in Australia.
Bondi Beach. And of course, he lives on the beach. What, has he got a tent?
I don't know. Perhaps he's got one of those, let's go surfing now, everybody. No.
Perhaps
he's got one of those vans, hasn't he? You know, like the old VW van we were talking about the other week.
Yeah, VW microbus.
Microbus, in behind the suicide jockey, 10-4 rubber duck. Bit of sad news to kick off the programme this particular week. In fact, a couple of sad news items.
Yeah,
Malcolm McLaren, who's lost his fight against cancer, age 64. And I have to say, I liked Malcolm McLaren. He was a good guy.
Yeah, he was... You know, we were talking last week about Patrick Moore being a sort of British institution.
Yeah.
Well, Malcolm McLaren managed to transmogrify him from being the British Andy Warhol into becoming an institution just like Patrick. And it's tragic. It's tragic to see somebody that as vibrant as him has just gone. That's like my mate Brendan Mullen. They were both...
Yeah, that's right. But it's funny, though, how come he's... I mean, if you look at Malcolm McLaren's career, which has done... He's done amazing stuff. You take on one hand Double Dutch.
Yeah.
That got an absolute nowhere response, didn't it? You don't remember Dutch?
No. I was thinking I might as well. I could respond like I knew what you were talking about. But then I thought, this is a news programme and news is about truth.
Right.
So I just treated it with, I just have no idea what you're talking about.
It's a skipping song.
Who is that, what it was called?
Yeah, Double Dutch.
I didn't realise that.
That's Malcolm McLaren. But he's better remembered for, of course, the Sex Pistols.
I saw the Sex Pistols on their first tour.
Did you?
UK tour, yeah. I was working at the Daily Star in Manchester, and there was a club across the road called The Hole in the Wall. And in those days, on a newspaper, when you got your break, you could, you'd like, basically, your break could be for the whole of the shift. If there was nothing happening, you didn't do it. You just went to the pub. I went to The Hole in the Wall, and yeah, there they were, and they were gobbing at the audience. The Gordies were chucking cans at them. It was absolutely bizarre and outrageous. And there was Malcolm McLaren standing in the corner, whipping everybody up into this incredible frenzy.
He was a stereotypical English eccentric.
Yeah, of course he was. Of course he was.
He was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
And he diddled Vivian Westwood. I'm not sure that's a good thing.
I'm not sure either. But we will miss him. I'll tell you what the other thing that he did in both the punk bit and the Double Dutch bit is he appealed to the youth of the time.
Yeah.
Smart man. Yeah. Absolutely.
When you think, there's Malcolm McLaren and Brendan Mullen, the two kings of punk, are up there in heaven or down there in the other place. Put this together, they'll create hell even if they are in heaven.
Well, that's very true. Moving along, another sad story for you, and we just owe this guy so much. We honestly do. Gentlemen, you probably won't have heard of, boys and girls, Dr. Henry Edward Roberts. Now, he was the inventor of an Altar 8800, which again will mean nothing to most people.
I don't remember that.
Well, have a look on the web, boys and girls, because he's just such a genius. He was the guy who really started off the home computer explosion, for want of a better term. And to a lot of people, he is the grandfather of personal computing. And he gets my vote every time. Don't take the mickey and don't go, oh. But he also... I know you didn't, but there'll be people at home going... He also kick-started the career of Bill Gates and Paul Allen. I knew you were going to do that. And he was the guy that actually sort of brought them in and gave these two young guys a chance. And funnily enough, the two Microsoft founders said in the statement, Ed was willing to take a chance on us. Two young guys interested in computing long before they were commonplace. True. And we always have to be grateful to him. Absolutely right. And funnily enough, taking both sort of opposing camps in terms of Apple, the day our first untested software worked on his Altair was the start of a lot of great things. And that was Steve, who was one of the co-founders of Apple. And that's what he put on the CNET website. And... you know, the guy was just such an amazing bloke, and wherever you are now, sir, we owe you a great debt of gratitude. And to be honest, you wouldn't be listening to us now if it wasn't for people like him. Funny that, isn't it?
Exactly. Well, a word of warning
what?
To him. Steer clear of that Malcolm McLaren and that Brendan Mullen.
Very true, very true. A couple of little quickie bits of news before we get onto the big subject in the UK of this week. Now, I know I'm going to get into trouble for this, Lee.
Go on, then.
Every time
Am I going to have a go at you?
Well, no, probably not.
Oh, okay.
But every time...
I don't understand it.
Every time I do stories connected to Apple, the Apple mob on the internet get cross with me. And I don't understand why.
I could just say they actually have got the pip.
I mean, I can't help it. If I think Apple owners take more care of the cardboard box it comes in than the other kit, because they'll need it when they have to send it back, or they keep the Apple box in a plastic bag up in the loft so it doesn't get dirty. I mean, that is the Apple blokes. Well, and I can't help it. Anyway, as you probably know from the TV and radio coverage elsewhere, the new iPad has come out. They sold... I think in the first couple of hours, something like 30,000 pieces in an hour or something. It was amazing. But...
Can we go out on iPad as well as iPhone?
Yes. Can do.
Hey! Right, carry on.
Well, there's a bit of a problem with it. Apparently, hundreds of people have complained about weak signals on the iPad. Now, I have not got an iPad, so I'm just going by what the support page of Apple itself is saying. But I can understand the problem. And they've said under certain conditions, the iPad may not automatically rejoin a known Wi-Fi network. It's apparently offered a fix, as the support page says, and was talking about routers and all sorts of other things, blah, 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 which I know only too well about. Try getting them to talk to an end system. Blimey. But anyway, there's some other comments from users on the iPhone, and which includes Wi-Fi reception seems weak with slow downloads. And a reply to that is, I'm having the same issues. Weak signal on the iPad, same spot, iPhone works great, very frustrating, says one of the people on the iPad thingy on the Apple support page. So, I don't know, it's often, you know, I say this so many times, Lee, it's often better to wait a couple of weeks, let the bugs get out of new toys when they come out, and then opt in. Do you know what I mean?
Well, but people get excited, don't they, when something... And I don't understand it. I don't get excited about things like this. But when something new, like the iPad, comes out, they would just want it, don't they? And I understand what you're saying. I've waited 15 years to get a new computer.
No, you're the Luddite that thinks we should still put hot metal thingies in print machines.
And so we should.
Mm.
I'll tell you what, I am one of the last people in this world, and don't try this at home, lady and gentleman, who can actually knows how, you know, the molten lead on a printing machine?
No.
Yeah, they have a bottle. A molten sort of bottle, really. He's like a bottle.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, I'm not pursuing it now, because neither have I.
You knew you were going to get that before we started. I was never going to...
No, I just forgot what... I just got the point as it came out.
Boys and girls...
Is that a sign of age?
But many years ago, boys and girls, they had this thing called hot metal for printing. It wasn't the sort of thing you get out of your scanner printer these days, nothing like that at all. And there was this lead that they used to shovel onto it and create newspapers.
Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen. Have you seen what... He's just run with one of my cast-offs. I just cast that off and he's now running with it.
Talking of new technology, and we did... Lee and I had a chat about this the other day. And
did we?
Yeah, we did. He's probably forgotten, though. it is the start of 4 weeks of boredom in the UK.
Oh, why? What is it? We haven't discussed this, you little liar.
No. You'll go, oh, yeah, in a minute, if he's honest. Whereby there's 4 weeks of campaigning. Thank God it's not like America. Sorry, America, where it goes on for months. It's the general election. Mr. Brown has decreed and gone to see the Queen, as he has to, and they've finished Parliament, so all the MPs now really aren't working anywhere.
Well, but do you generally have one?
What?
An election.
Do I generally have an election? No, I'm not going to do that. Anyway, now this is what I think, and I'd love to hear your comments for various reasons, and we'll come into all the bits and the stories in a minute. I think this time the interweb is going to play a significant part in who wins the election.
You told me the interweb didn't exist.
Well, it doesn't. I'm just doing it for you. And
that's fine. I understand now, then.
The boys and girls know what I'm talking about. That's what counts. And I'm not saying they're going to influence the majority of the vote, but what I am saying is they will influence the minority that are floating voters at the moment, and therefore will end up being the key part to make the decision as to who is the winner in the long term. And I don't think some of these politicians have got their heads around it yet, Lee.
Well, I don't think they have.
No.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Oh, blast.
But the problem is, with an election being led by the internet, it's fraught with all the dangers that any kind of thing that could be classed as citizen journalism is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think yeah, it's like this thing about Facebook.
Well, we'll do that in a minute.
Oh, all right.
Do that in a minute. But I want to start off with one just to prove my point. Apparently, a Labour election candidate who cursed, meaning he said naughty words about politicians.
Have you read the tirade of abuse that he put out on Twitter?
Well, I have read it, but I can't repeat it on the radio.
No, you can't. Not even we can say the things that he said.
No.
This is a politician.
Right. This was a potential politician, not an actual one, a potential MP who had a go at David Cameron. He's the Conservative Party, and Nick Clegg from the Liberal Democrats, on his Twitter page. And subsequently, he's now no longer the candidate for Moray, and this is a Stuart McLennan, and he's been suspended as a Labour member after admitting tweeting these offensive comments. Now, was he coming from?
Well, that's exactly the point. How could anybody with that kind of mentality actually consider themselves worthy of being an MP? And also, how could a political party have not realised that this bloke was capable of this kind of thing?
Did he actually understand that when you click on your computer, it goes round the world?
I know, and that is something which, if we can get round to it later on, is very interesting about that. Something that happened with Street View that we were talking about.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. You don't know what's happening to you. Once you put something out on the web, and, you know, I'm learning this very quickly now, you don't know who's getting it. You don't realise how many millions of people can actually see what you've done. And this McLennan idiot.
Yeah.
He's just destroyed himself. Well, he's destroyed his credibility.
Well, yeah.
Everybody in this world swears. There is nothing wrong with swearing.
If you're in a rugby changing room or a football changing room or somewhere like that.
Or in the pub with your mates.
Well, as long as you keep
nobody
it. Yes.
Going to be offended.
Yeah. But and this actually summarises something for me around the world. Everybody listening will get this. Because you have politicians, members of your parliament or your senate or whatever system it is, who make decisions about digital media, namely the interweb and or Twitter and or whatever else it happens to be. They're making decisions about digital media and they have no idea how to use it. How can they make a decision?
Absolutely. I remember when I was about, I don't know, when I first started to swear, I might have been about, well, I probably started to swear when I was about 6. As I learned to speak, I learned to swear. But I actually started to use it as a
You didn't speak till you were 6 years old?
No, I just thought, I can't say that. I needed a bleep button then, so I had to not say it. But,
You mean you're telling me you were a teenager before your time? You used to walk around up until 6 years old going, ugh.
Huh. Yeah, basically. Yeah, I couldn't be bothered speaking. I just didn't say any point. Everybody else was doing it around me.
So you make up for it now, then?
Well, yeah. There's all these things I have to say now at 6 years old. I didn't have particularly strong political views. I wasn't into philosophy and stuff like that. I was burgeoning as a genius, but it hadn't quite grown into its own form yet. So I kept my gobshut.
Right. And now?
I forgot what point. Oh, that's right, yeah. And when I started swearing properly, when I was about 14, and no matter who was there, I would just swear deliberately in front of them because I thought it made me look grown up.
Yeah.
My mother said to me, very simply, now, Lee, there is nothing wrong with swearing, but please don't do it in front of your grandmother. And that is the point, isn't it?
Do you know what my father used to say to me? When you start swearing in an argument, you've lost the argument.
I don't necessarily agree with that, but it is a good sort of maxim for life.
Well, blow you then, sir.
You cannot do that whether you swear at me or not.
Damn you, sir. I'm going to argue with you again.
Go on, then. Please do. I love it when you talk rough with me.
Anyway, here's a really crazy situation, again coming out of the UK, which I just love this. One organisation in the UK, so it's what they call an NGO, a non-government body, has been lambasting Facebook, absolutely attacking Facebook for not having a panic button on it. Facebook say, we've got all these things in place. People can report stuff. It does work, blah, blah, blah. Fine.
If you reported somebody on Facebook, how long would it... And it was a serious thing.
Mm.
You know, if you found a pedo disguised as a 12-year-old girl, how long would it take Facebook to react?
Very quickly.
Within a day or a couple of hours?
Well, it depends on... Don't forget, the problem is that... And I'm not defending Facebook or being pro-Facebook. The reality is... If you send something through to whatever department it happens to be, like the legal department, which they will have, if it's 7 o'clock in the morning in England, everybody in the US is...
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So you can't judge... You have to think about where people are.
Yeah.
Therefore, you could argue it takes 2 days sometimes, but actually it's not. It depends on what time you register the thing and how much workload they've got and loads of other stuff. But it's already been proven that Facebook does get the complaints and does act where necessary on the complaints. The trouble for organisations as big as Facebook is you get stupid people who don't like somebody just because they whistled the wrong tune and they report them, which is daft. So don't do it. But anyway...
No, don't you dare do it.
No. Anyway, on the other side of the case, so Facebook from one organisation in the UK is a bad thing. On the other side of the UK, Facebook's wonderful.
Yeah. I can't believe it. I think this is abuse of the new world.
So apparently Facebook is going to help younger voters who have not registered to vote in the UK before the 20th of April deadline. Now, the organisation that does this in the UK is called the Electoral Commission, and their job... Part of their job is A, to validate you're supposed to be voting, but B, encourage everybody. Stop moving your microphone around.
I just did like a rock star with it. I swung it around on its wire over my head and caught it.
God. Anyway, we did. The other part of the Electoral Commission's role is to get as many people who should be voting to actually vote. You know, it makes sense. So Facebook users who visit Facebook in the UK over this coming weekend will be asked if they've registered to vote. If they say no, they will be sent to a page linked to the Electoral Commission that lets them enter details online. The only problem I can see with this, and I don't know how it's going to work yet because I don't, if you're on holiday from Australia, you use a UK connection... It doesn't. Mm-hmm. You haven't put where you live in your Facebook profile. Are you going to get offered a vote?
Well, absolutely. But what will happen then? You know, your records, your own records, will show you you don't live in Britain.
Not everybody puts all the details in. Yourself. Yeah.
Now the other thing that worries me about this, though, quite seriously, is it's they say it's aimed at young people, but actually there are a lot of middle-aged people on Facebook
and old people like you
but the young people who haven't registered to vote yet, and I've got to hold my hand up here now, and you can try and shoot me down in flames, but you'll never win. I have never registered to vote.
But do you vote?
I have never voted in my life.
Well, how can you complain about government if you don't vote?
Well, because my vote really doesn't carry enough clout in the world to make that much difference.
Oh, that's a fudge answer. That's a political answer.
It isn't really. But the main problem is, it is my vote. I have an inalienable right to have this vote.
Yes, I agree.
And it's like a front door. I don't open my front door just because somebody's knocked on it.
No.
You know, I have a vote, I have to vote. No. There is nobody who I want to vote for.
Fair enough.
Therefore,
so what
I will
about...
Because
I've got really strong views about this, because obviously I've emigrated. I've emigrated. I don't believe, and I don't understand why, unless you're part of the civil service or the military especially, who are working overseas and have a justified right to vote. Why should expats vote? We don't live there anymore.
You can still have an interest in your country.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean to say we should decide who the government is.
Well, Well, yeah, I don't see anything wrong with that. If you're living out of this country, right. You are still you still feel an allegiance to it,
mm-hmm.
And if you want to vote, you should have that right to vote because this is your home. You might at some stage come back to it.
They'll never have me back, Lee.
Well, no, that's it. That's it. I could thoroughly agree with them. Don't bring Derek back.
Derek?
What?
You just said Derek, you pellock.
I know I did. I always say that when I'm taking the mickey out.
Oh,
did I explain this to you before?
Have you?
Oh, I don't know why. It just makes me laugh. But listen to what I'm saying.
Okay.
Right?
Yes.
You have an inalienable right to use your vote even though you live abroad. It must be that way.
I just... Right? Well, I'm not going to...
I have an inalienable right to save my vote until I feel that somebody is worth voting for. I don't think there's anybody here that I would like to vote for. Like, for instance...
You! I'd vote for you, Lee!
Well, we were going to set up a political party and it never happened.
Well, we did get a few nominations for it, but most of the girlies didn't like the ideas.
Yeah, that's right.
Which kind of messed
it
up.
It was the girlies who spoilt my political career. That happens to a lot of politicians, doesn't it?
Yes. But I can't argue with... I understand your point, and I do really, really respect it. I just think, equally, if you decide to go and live in another country, which could be Australia, for example, you don't have the right at that point to vote in a general election in another country. I just don't see that as being right.
I do, you see. I definitely do see it as right.
Yeah.
Because it is your country. Your family live over here. You've got people, you've got people, friends, you've got... The things that you want to influence. There is nothing that I can't influence this country by my one vote.
No.
I won't give that vote to Gordon Brown or to
David Cameron
or
Nick Clegg.
I won't give it to any of them.
No, I'll see what you're saying. Because we have to keep the balance, don't you know, boys and girls? We keep the balance, irrelevant of the fact that we're what we are. We keep the balance, which is the most important.
The balance, yes.
Very quickly, some of the other topics that are hot topics in the election at the moment. One of them is Lee is now paying nearly £6, which is like $3.50 for 5 litres or a gallon of fuel. Bearing in mind, in America, a gallon's different to a British gallon, because there's imperial ones and smaller ones. You're now paying £6 a gallon for petrol. How do you feel, Lee?
How do I feel?
Yeah.
I'm glad I don't drink it. But actually, when you do think of it in that way, £6... well, how many pints of beer would that buy? You see, £6 would only buy you 2.5 pints of beer.
Would it?
Yeah, 2.5 pints of beer. Petrol, is it that expensive when you compare it to the price of beer? Not really, you're getting a gallon. Instead of 2.5 pints, you're getting a gallon of petrol.
I can see lots of people doing naughty stuff like putting different fuels in cars instead.
Well, my friend, Jeff the Peth, actually drove his car on biofuel.
Yeah.
10-15 years ago, what he used to do, and a lot of people do this now, but he had worked this out, clever bloke, he would just go around all the fish and chip shops and places like that and get on the old oil.
So he got a diesel car.
Yeah, and he just used to put it straight into it, and it had worked. It was a bit poppy, and it stank a bit, like you could smell him coming from miles away.
Especially if he went past the curry house. Where's Jeff been today? Curry. Where's Jeff been today? Fish and chips. Et cetera.
No. If he crashed, you say, yeah, well, you've had your chips. It's just funny. This was 15 years ago when he was doing it.
Yeah, you can do.
Yeah.
But of course, you have to pay tax on that now as well. So tax that.
Even if
you get your own oil, they tax you in the same way as you would. Well, it's cheaper, but... they find a way to tax you for everything.
£6 a gallon. It's more than £6 a gallon in some places, you know. There's a garage, a petrol station about 2.5 miles from me.
Yeah.
And it's now £6.30.
Wow. That's the end of part one, boys and girls. A postcard from Pup Rab. We'll be back in a second. Give you a chance to make a cup of tea. Probably not. And Lee and I will be returning. And the first thing we're going to do is announce... Lee's ancestors are found.
Oh.
RTI.